Welcome to My Happy Defender Childhood. This week, we're talking Friday the 13th. Now, unless you're a big Friday the 13th head, of course, you might be picturing Jason Voorhees, tall, powerful, wearing the hockey mask. But, unfortunately, of course, I have to correct you here. The first one doesn't even star Jason. I guess spoilers for the end of this, so I won't tell you who it is, but it's not Jason Voorhees. Second, other than a few sexy teens that get destroyed, this completely forgettable movie doesn't even have the hockey mask. That comes around to the third one. So, this weird kind of mediocre movie, which, again, I enjoyed, though I seem to be the only one on the panel who really did, spawns a massive franchise, which, strangely enough, has very little to do with the source material based on the first one. The caricature of the hockey-faced killer comes much later, so. Anyway. Thanks to those of you who voted. We have an episode coming on Hellraiser, so I guess thank you, question mark. But, obviously, I don't even know the results of the poll yet, because it's still going on. But please vote for your favorite action people, so that we can make sure that we get a month based on the action star that you guys are. So with that in mind, follow us on Twitter and Facebook and Letterboxd and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, thanks.
Welcome to My Happy Defender Childhood. This week, we are reviewing Friday the 13th, a movie that when we could have watched it on literally Friday the 13th, people opted out of watching it.
We watched a way better movie.
We watched a significantly better movie. So I'm Nick Hoffman, host of My Happy Defender Childhood and riffer on Cineprov. And on panel, we've got
Matthew Quinn, who Daniel thought I was dead, didn't he? That's what he told you when I wasn't here the other day. Well, I lived out in the woods. I turned into a 400-pound hulking man with a machete. Oh, wait, wrong movie.
Hello, this is Daniel, and somebody owes me a goddamn refund.
Steve-O here, the guy that's done nothing.
Steve Incognito here, just being totally all the time not guilty
Incognito.
Of anything.
Incognito. I'm the guy that drank a lot until I don't remember anything that happened in this movie. Thankfully, nothing happened, so I've got nothing to remember this time around.
Yeah, more or less.
So this is episode number 2 in our heavy hitters. Two weeks ago, did Nightmare on Elm Street, which should be in your feed. And then we put it to you guys on Twitter who our third heavy hitter is going to be. We gave you Candyman. We gave you Jigsaw. We gave you Chucky. But you guys chose the Cenobites because, I guess, fuck you.
Because we have such sights to show you, Nick.
So we're going to do, for your third movie, we're going to do the first Hellraiser, which Daniel and Matt are very excited about. I don't know how many Twitter handles they have, but all of them voted.
I have 5, all right? And they were all dedicated to this poll.
Because we do have such sights to show you.
And if you are listening now, there's still probably a week left. Maybe a little bit more than that, of our action movie poll. And we've decided that whoever wins November is going to get their entire own month. So if you haven't paid attention, the original bracket rounds for the round robin, we had something like 3,600 votes. And now we're going through the first and second round of the brackets as we're recording. So we're probably halfway through the second round by now. And we're eliminating people, man. Some people I thought would make it all the way to the end. Jean-Claude Van Damme was eliminated in the first round.
You people didn't want to watch Time Cop? Have we already done Time Cop?
No,
we have not done Time Cop.
No.
I mean, that split, man, when he electrocutes the guy in his kitchen. Kitchen islands have never been used so well. Balls are dropping. Friday the 13th is a Sean Cunningham movie. He doesn't matter. But what does is the invention of the Voorhees family and the Voorhees curse, none of which is explained here.
That is so weird. They never explain who Jason is or what happened until like the last 10 minutes of the movie.
Although we see some people almost bang, which apparently is the impotence for this whole movie.
Half- did you just say impotence?
Yeah, I did.
I'm halfway convinced that they just put all of the actors in like an abandoned camp and just hid cameras around. It was like some sort of weird early version of the Truman Show.
Or Survivor with murder grandma with a knife.
You know what? Better version of Survivor.
Oh my God. Naked and Afraid, but with Jason Voorhees.
He'll give you not afraid. He'll give you reason to be afraid, all right.
Ultimately, it'd be like the... But what is that damn 700 Club channel, CSN?
I don't know.
Yeah, but that's
CBN,
what it is.
Christian Broadcasting?
That's what it is. Like, and then you have just Jason Voorhees is like one of those people. One of them.
Now, on YouTube, you can find a clip from the early 90s of Jason on the Arsenio Hall show. Have you ever seen this?
I have not.
Oh, man. It's Arsenio Hall trying to interview Jason, and he just sits on the couch, and he doesn't say a word the entire time.
Well, but here's the thing. Now I realize why Jason versus Freddy is such a stupid idea. It's just an Aaron Sorkin talkie talk, but it's a monologue. Like, he's surrounded by a more interesting person, but he doesn't let him speak. It's like the... Well, it's like Jay and Silent Bob, frankly.
Yeah.
Well, Freddy does swear enough for that to work.
Snoochie Boochies. That's what I got. I don't know.
So, who wants to give us a plot?
can I do it this time?
I think we just did.
Yeah. All right, Matt, why don't you go ahead?
Okay, it's 1979 or 1980, and this guy named, I think, Steve Christie is trying to reopen the summer camp where 30-odd years before, two horny camp counselors had been murdered, and the whole town of colorful local characters, including Crazy Ralph, are telling him not to. And so he brings in a bunch of counselors to refurbish the camp, and they start to die.
Mm-hmm. Including a young Kevin Bacon, who gets an arrow through his throat.
Yeah, the killer, who we'll get to a little later, somehow must have a lot of upper body strength to shove it right through his body at that angle.
It's Mrs. Voorhees. It's Jason's mom. This is like almost a 40-year-old movie at this point, and it looks it. So if you didn't know that, then we can't help you.
Frankly, also, it doesn't matter, because it's not like the fact that it's set up as though, I mean, ooh, it could be a mystery on who's killing them. Doesn't matter, because if it was, it'd be a Scooby-Doo. You'd be introduced to old Lady Voorhees. She should be someone at the diner who's like, now that Christie shouldn't be doing anything up here. I don't know why I made them all Mainers. I'm listening to Pet Sematary, the audiobook, and it's done by Michael C. Hall, so it's done by Dexter.
Nice.
Sometimes dead is better, Nick.
No, you gotta sound like Pepperidge Farm remembers when dead was better. Like, it's up there. But I mean, that's what it should be. You should introduce these people. There should be a red herring. Maybe it's the trucker who came back to kill these kids because they're too sexy.
They should have put the Jason drowning scene at the beginning of the movie.
They should have. They should have included it somewhere, because who is Voorhees? She's nobody. She just appears in the late stages of the film. And there's actually a very interesting backstory to this, but like, it doesn't matter for most of the film. She's just some old lady that's got like amazing slapping technique and apparently amazing like bracing and stabbing technique, but she has no skill whatsoever. She's just there.
Yeah, when she's actually ambushing people, she's pretty clever, but when someone's actually alert to her, it's a slap fight.
She would lose American. She would lose American Gladiator against a turtle. She's terrible. She has no physical prowess. She's very clever, but she's not a very good villain.
She rocks the corded sweater. I mean,
yeah, and she's got a great perm. I mean, she's amazing in a lot of ways.
She has her own hairdresser listed in the credits.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's crazy beyond her years.
You know, sometimes you see a lot of circles talking about there's not enough roles for older actresses in Hollywood. Well, they can be your killer grandma. We've got probably the only killer grandma movie I've ever seen.
No, but it's very interesting because you bring up the arrow through the throat, and she's able to brace a man against a bed, against his will, and stab him through the throat with an arrow. But when it comes to hand-in-hand combat against another, like, frail woman...
It's a slap fight.
It's a slap fight, and she's, like, losing this slap fight. It's ridiculous, and I'm sorry if I'm glossing over the first hour of this movie, but none of that matters. It's the last 30 minutes that actually does
matter. In the first hour of the movie, at one point there's a scene where one of the female counselors gets scared by a snake, and everyone in the camp runs in, tries to kill it. Do they have nothing better to do?
Okay, so they never found the snake.
Yeah, they did.
They cut its head off with a knife.
Okay, I must have been in the pisser. They never found the snake in my book.
Again, the first hour, you know, no one has anything better to do except act silly.
But this is kind of a good, like, tie a little bow on this. Like, this didn't matter. There was this snake. Who gives a shit? Yeah. What happened in the first hour of this movie? Did they find a snake? Who cares? What happened?
I've got a challenge.
Oh, God.
I've got a challenge for everyone. Speaking of things that don't matter, we've named one of the actors in this, and that was Kevin Bacon. Can anybody name a single character beyond Mrs. Voorhees and Jason?
Alice.
Kevin Bacon.
Jim.
Sorry.
The accountant. Oh, and
Ralph.
Crazy Ralph. Okay.
Crazy Ralph.
And Dorf.
Dorf Von Dorf or whatever.
Oh, the cop, yes.
Who's in like one scene.
And he steals that scene from even crazy asshole. What was his name?
I don't know.
The crazy guy who was running around with a headdress with 88 printed on his ass.
Ned?
Was that Ned? Crazy Ned. 88 was the number he was wearing throughout the entire time. I don't know if you noticed it. I don't know. It was a Miami Dolphins jersey he was wearing. I have no answers for you. No. Only more questions.
A Miami Dolphins jersey in New Jersey?
Why not?
New Jersey doesn't have a team. I mean, laces out, bitches. I don't have an answer for you. It was a weird note that he must have brought his own outfits to set.
See, I didn't even remember Alice. I know who you're talking about, this final girl that eventually decapitates Mrs. Voorhees, but compared to like Nightmare on Elm Street, we have Nancy, we have Freddy, we have...
Oh, you want a Halloween movie where people are like established or
exactly.
Something, you know? God, Jamie Lee Curtis would have been a breath of fresh air. But I mean, that's the problem. I don't know at what point Kevin Bacon was in his career. I know he had done Animal House, but that's kind of it. But like, he must have been on set for 4 days? 5 days?
I have a feeling that the only thing he said to his agent at that point was, "Thank you, sir. May I have another?" Yep.
I only mention that because he's their acting juice, whatever they got. Because even Mrs. Voorhees, who may have been someone, because she's competent as an actress in this movie.
Is she?
She's not a good fighter, but she's good at the acting part. But that being said, no one else is. At least in Halloween, they put their money on the person who's on stage the entire time, right? It's kind of like with Nightmare on Elm Street. The problem we had was the best person, which is Johnny Depp, is dead in like 20 minutes.
Poor guy. But that's Kevin Bacon in this film, right?
Although, who had the better death? Him or Johnny?
Johnny.
Oh, yeah, hands down.
When he's pulled through that fucking mattress, Oh, it's so good.
There were a couple exclamations in the room of like, that was a great death. And I mean, come on, Nightmare on Elm Street. The deaths were actually cleverly creative. They were fictional deaths. They were clever. Well, a bit of the charm in this film is that everything was very gritty and realistic, right? And the deaths were kind of interesting, but they were a little too realistic. They were just an arrow through the throat. Cool, but
yeah.
No one got pulled into the vortex of a bed.
There's no world building here.
There's no world building here.
The effects are cool, but they're not built up in any way. Like, I mean, that's the thing Halloween does good, and even later Jason movies do well, which is that they're being hunted effectively. Here, they don't have any realization that anything's happening until the last couple deaths, kinda. They don't even notice that Crazy Ned has been killed half an hour before, which is ridiculous.
Well, Crazy Ned was doing that Sandlot fake drowning makeout thing, so maybe no one really cared if he was dead.
Well, yeah, but you'd still notice if there's six of you and one of you's missing.
They're too busy having sex or having strip monopoly.
No, but that's a real plot point here, is that they are too busy having sex.
And strip monopoly.
And they pan up immediately in the sort of juxtaposition between having sex and there being a dead body on the bunk above you. I mean, that's a real plot point in this film of sort of the obliviousness of everyone in this, and I don't know if they thought that was going to build suspense,
well,
but it really didn't for me.
There was that sex scene in the bunk beds where the counselors are on the lower bunk, and one of, I forget who it was, but one of the people who's been killed is on the top bunk with his throat slit, and it's like nobody notices, and I don't know, it's just, it doesn't really mean anything. This really is kind of just jump scare the movie, 1980s edition.
But not very many jump scares.
Even so, though, I mean, it's meant to just, oh, there's somebody with their throat slit in the bed of top of this bunk bed. That's like a campfire story.
Or you open the door and he's been nailed to the door with arrows.
There were a couple of jump scares.
Yeah, and
but jump scares aren't what makes a good horror film, right?
And does Mrs. Voorhees have the upper body strength to pull an arrow with a draw enough to spear someone to a door?
Why not?
No, but that's what they needed, is to build that lore, to build, and that's why I liked Nightmare on Elm Street, right? They build up the lore of Freddy, right? He's this kind of, you don't know if he's real or not, but it doesn't matter because he defies physics. He defies reason. He can do things that you don't think can happen. And this one just doesn't do that. They're sort of very real moments that are kind of a little bit too boring.
Well, even in Halloween, the reason that's effective is because you care when the characters die. And they're doing the same things that happen in this movie. They're all having sex. They're all ignoring the children that they're supposed to be watching. They're basically the same, but John Carpenter managed to make you care about them.
They're expendable? Are you trying to suggest a rockin' pair of tits is expendable, Daniel?
In the context of this movie, yes.
Either my friend David or I came up with this description of most characters in most of these movies, teen slasher meat. Because that's all they are.
Well, that's all this film is, and it sets the precedence for it, and it's frankly kind of boring.
Yeah.
Now, I asked this question while we were watching it. What was the first Friday the 13th movie that everybody remembers seeing?
Remembers seeing?
Yeah.
Well, honestly, when I think... The problem is I remember The Mask. So I must have seen a middle one. And as I was telling you when we were watching this, it must have been TBS or USA Network at some point. So it was probably a mid to late one that was on the cheap. And, I mean, eventually the ones that I saw through on DVD were later because, I mean, as you guys have established on the show, I was kind of a coward when I was a kid. So I didn't watch a lot of horror, not realizing that it wasn't actually scary. Right.
Which was the one where I remember seeing on TV where Jason comes into the cabin, a little kid is awake and sees him, and he just kind of leans in scary, and then something happens and he goes away. That might have been the first time I've actually seen anything from a Jason movie.
Was that, that was a nightmare you had the one time, you know, where Jason was there to touch just the side of you. No,
Nick, I didn't know you were into that.
I'm going to get this confused. What was the one with the ultra-Christian guy?
Oh, good Lord.
Cameron. No.
Growing Pains?
Yeah.
Kirk Cameron? I don't think he was ever in a Nightmare, a Jason movie.
Was he in Halloween?
Nope.
Are you thinking of Corey Feldman?
Yes.
Three or four, I think?
That would be what Matt's thinking of, right? Like the child that he like he skeezes on?
I'm pretty sure it was four. I'm sure our followers on Twitter will yell at
us.
Me, yes.
I mean, like, you know, all four of you, charmers. But here's the thing. That's what I remember. I mean, I know you were talking about Jason versus Freddy. I saw Jason versus Freddy, too, at one of them, you know, college sleepovers where you sleep over because you're too drunk to move.
Yep.
Correct.
That was my first thing I did with anybody at college. We all got in my car and we drove to see Freddy versus Jason.
Oh, I thought you were going to say we all got so drunk we couldn't move.
Yeah.
That's not really how I rolled.
You waited for college for that?
But yeah, I get it. The problem is, as an adult, I realize these movies aren't scary. They're fun, which is why I hate things like Human Centipede and the later Saw movies. Thanks for not making me watch them, guys.
Because you're welcome.
They're not scary. They're just gross.
They're just gross. Yeah.
They're just torture porn, man. It's.
I do like the second Saw. That's the only one I'll actually stand up for. The other ones, no.
I think the first one's such a funny movie. It's so stupid. It's garbage. I've watched it. The first one I've seen all the way through. I have a friend named Andy who never did the podcast, but, you know, he exists. He might listen. Hi, Andy. But we would go over to his house in when I was in grad school and he was just out of college. We would just watch the final scenes from Saw where they had the contraption, like the Rube Goldberg machines just snapping into play. Which is kind of fun, I guess.
This is like playing Mousetrap without knowing how to play the game. Like, I don't care.
Because who could give a shit?
Who cares? The mechanism is cool. The rest of it can get fucked. Who cares?
It's just like, it's like a history lesson. Well, this is what the Spanish Inquisition was like if you were kind of Muslim. Well, you pooped yourself.
Yeah.
Huh. I can't say I expected that.
Yeah. It's well, plum howdy. Did you know you could bend that way? Oh, nope. She can't. Never mind.
To me, at least, Jason Voorhees was... I knew who he was long before I could have or would have seen his movies myself because he was parodied so much, even after the franchise ended. I mean, I know in Christmas Vacation, they had that Friday the 13th parody. That Tiny Toons movie they did, How I Spent My Summer Vacation, there was that brief... Jason parody, and I think by that time there was only one movie left in the original series, and I'm pretty sure the first one I saw was Freddy versus Jason.
I think I saw the first one I saw in its entirety was Jason Takes Manhattan on USA Network.
That would not surprise me, because that's the thing, these are just so interchangeable, which makes this movie weird because it's not really a Jason movie, it's a Mrs. Voorhees movie.
Well, and it's funny, I'm stealing my own joke from when Cineprof Drift Terminator 1, but Terminator 1 feels like a fan film for Terminator 2. This definitely feels like the fan film for Friday 2 or 3.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, you know, but like, what if we made a movie about his mom? Like, isn't that a cool idea? No, it's not, but, you know.
What if Jason had a rocking pair of tits? Wouldn't that be a sweet film?
No, but like, what if she had a rocking cool sweater?
No, well,
you know, Steve-O's a cougar cub. Of course he's looking at Betsy Palmer like that.
What if she had a big frumpy sweater and a sea of teenage tits? What a film that would be.
But like, what if there were like a bunch of hot like teen guys and girls and she was like a marshmallow person?
And they were all making out and she just like showed up and cut all their fucking heads off. Wouldn't that be a sweet film?
But she's like, you should save yourself for marriage, and then started stabbing people. Like, how great would that be?
You know, my biggest question about her, where she got that leather jacket she was wearing in the one scene where they filmed her from the back.
I mean, like, did she shop at Tall and Cool or what?
I guess so.
Well, Grandma joined a biker gang. That's where she. That's how she avoided getting prosecuted for killing the counselors in the 50s, which then joined, you know, pistol-packing grandmas and drove off for a while.
I mean, what effectively the last act of this movie is, someone saw Psycho all wrong. They're like, but what if it was the mom who was really killing people and the kid died all along? And you're just like, wait, what? And she's, because she starts hearing her son in her head. But mommy, why don't you kill them? Mommy?
You're painting the only good part of this film in the worst light possible.
What if the snozzberries tasted like snozzberries?
But the good part, the quote-unquote good part of the film isn't that good.
The good part is hiding in a pantry.
And by the by, like, the problem is we're living in 2019 where there's 1,000 of all of these movies and everyone's ripped them off. And I've even seen with Zeus, you know, former regular Zeus, something called Santa's Sleigh, which is just unwatchable and it's phenomenal. But they all follow the same thing, which is that you establish the killer early and then people run and then try to figure out the killer, and then you mix that with a little Scooby-Doo, and they're trying to figure out who the killer is, and then they're trying to avoid the killer, yada, yada. None of that happens. That part is literally the last 15 minutes of the movie, but then the movie doesn't want to end. Like, the last girl and Mrs. Voorhees are playing grab-ass for 20 minutes of this movie.
Well, how many times does Alice knock her down or incapacitate her?
So many! Take the fucking weapon!
At least 3 or 4.
Well, she cracks her skull open at one point because she's on the floor just bleeding, and then she apparently regains conscious and her sweater is... It's a white sweater, but yeah, it looks great.
Well, and here's the thing.
The fourth time, we were cheering at least a little bit when Alice just takes a machete and in one swing just take Grandma's head off.
Well, I was cheering for the Tom Savini effect, which, best part of this movie, the fact Tom Savini did the makeup.
Well, and the effects, right?
Like, yeah, and the effects. Tom Savini, for those who don't know, shame on you. Yeah. He was a special effects artist who was famous for working with George Romero. So in Dawn and Day of the Dead, he's the guy doing all the zombie makeup and the gore effects in those movies. And he was also in Dawn of the Dead as like one of the biker gang leaders.
What we're alluding to earlier is Savini's doing these effects. People bleed out from the neck, and it's awesome. You get a couple bloody axe wounds. You get... what's his name? Kevin Bacon gets a bladed arrow through his neck, a good hunting arrow through the neck, which is something. Crazy Ned is cut across the neck. And then who's the other man?
Steve.
Jim Testosterone is shot with arrows through the door.
Oh, the best one was the axe getting lodged in that one person's head.
Great effects.
Right.
Like, all great effects across the board.
Now, let's be clear. We're not cheering on people dying in vicious ways. We're cheering on the special effects because this movie cost $500,000 to make, and the effects looked fairly good.
That's where literally all the budget must have gone through.
Yeah.
And that was the right call because everything else has... I mean, and Daniel and I disagree on this, but that's because, well, one of us is a film reviewer, and I just enjoy movies. You have kind of a Twin Peaks airy nothingness to this. You're lost in the woods. It's virtually silent. There's almost no background music until some asshole gets the idea like, she's stabbing people. We better play the Psycho theme. And then someone with a Casio is trying to pretend it's a Moog. And they're just like, near, 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 near. It's the Nintendo version of the Psycho theme is what I'm saying.
Yeah, basically. They don't have the distinctive ca, 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 shh.
That shows up a couple times.
It's about a third of the sounds we hear, and it's fine. It's just that a lot of it is silent nothing, and I think it's a good ethereal nothingness. The last act is what bothers me, honestly. It's because when Alice knocks away the blade, here's the thing. If OJ's coming after you and you're Nicole Brown, you take the knife, right? Like, you fight back. And she keeps fucking leaving the knife behind.
She just runs
three times.
Scene to scene to scene. Worthless.
You say scene to scene to scene. You're right. This is like a bad video game or something where she's like, on to the next stage.
God. Yeah.
We go from a bad kitchen to a bad pantry to outside to the boat. And then she just ends up having, like, the vapors or something, and she faints on the boat until the cops wake her up the next day.
No. Well, the actual ending is a complete ripoff of Carrie, where she's on the boat, and the cops find her, and then 10-year-old Jason comes out from underneath the lake and tries to pull her in, and then she wakes up in hospital dead.
Please, 50-year-old zombie Jason.
This is such a case of Sean Cunningham's like, I need an end to my movie. And he just watches movies and he's like, I somehow stumbled across the end of my movie.
Sean Cunningham was the guy who produced Last House on the Left, which was a hugely notorious movie when it was released, but back in like the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people were angry that thing got released. So he's a much better producer than he is a director because he like knows how to market stuff and he knows how to respond to public taste, but he just doesn't know how to tell a story.
But the thing is, he did all those things. This is a much better market movie than it is a movie. This is, I mean, fuck, I love Jim Cameron, but this is an Avatar situation. the movie is not rewatchable. It's garbage, but you can sell the hell out of the idea.
Avatar made me empathize with the cat people whose tree got blown up. This movie, no, who cares about any of these people?
I didn't care about the cat people.
I remember Alice because she's literally the second credit. And her hair is just 1975, and I mean, I have a Gerald Ford thing. But otherwise, there's nothing to this fucking thing.
There's not. I watched this film for 90 minutes, and I don't remember why they were at this camp. I think they were setting it up for campers, or just there to fuck.
They were DTF, because no work was done. As we learned during the rainstorm where everything was leaking.
Look, the guy with a fabulous mustache and the short shorts...
Oh, those jorts.
...helped nail a gutter in place, and then he fucked off to a cafe. Like,
we don't know where he went. He just ended up with a trailer of things covered in things. And by the by, the closest he was to getting laid was with that waitress at the diner, that 75-year-old woman.
Poor guy, and he got murdered too, and he wasn't part of the shenanigans.
Now, was
stupid sexy Flanders.
Yeah,
stupid
was that supposed to be Flanders. The owner of the camp?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, the way I understand it is that old Christy, they bought it on the cheap. He was going to fix it up for some kids. Oh, and by the way, I don't know if they ever contacted those kids, but otherwise, in like 2 days, come Monday, about... What'd you say? 50 inner city kids are going to show up.
50 kids, mostly from the inner city.
I just imagined a bunch of kids from the Bronx showing up and they're still scraping up the corpse. Hey, Matt, holy shit, there's a bunch of dead kids here.
It's a bunch of Mets fans. Get them out of here.
Hey, what's the matter, you kids getting fucking killed?
I'm sorry, Mets fans. I love you. Fuck
you. No, you don't. I'm a fucking Braves fan here. Oh, man, you're an Indians fan. It'd be like supporting the Yankees. Go Yankees, motherfucker!
I'm here to talk trash about the Yankees. Yeah. This is where this is going.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, a New York sports team win causes more carnage than we see in this movie.
At least it's not Philly. They'd be throwing batteries at us. Anyway, yeah, no. So the end of this movie wraps up in a weird little package where she's apparently gone crazy. We get an oddly sexual scene where she gets shot in the butt with Valium for some reason.
Yeah.
Yep.
I thought they were maybe stitching up a wound or something.
No, that was a syringe filled with stuff they stuck in her butt. Give her 10 cc's of Valium. And they're like, and she's just like, all right, two in the tush.
I will praise Sean Cunningham for one thing. I mean, plenty of women take their pants off, but never does he like zoom in and linger on it or anything. It's like, all right. Thank you for your restraint, Mr. Cunningham.
Well, no, I mean...
So he's not Michael Bay.
Yeah, basically.
He's not Michael Bay. He's not... Well, a lot of the later directors who take over the franchise, even. Like, there's no inherent sex... I mean, there's sexy teens who are making out. Like, they sexualize Kevin Bacon as much as they do Woman X, a character he's banging, because they show his ass as much as they do her boobs, and... Her boobs are covered more than his ass is.
I mean, I was more aroused by Kevin Bacon's ass than anything else in this
Kevin
film.
Kevin Bacon's the yeah. sexiest person in this movie, great. Hands down.
Not Betsy Palmer?
No, definitely, I mean, definitely Kevin Bacon.
Oh, there you go.
There we go.
Maybe if he brought the bacon to Betsy Palmer, she'd be in a much more calm and placid frame of mind.
She's a golden girl, that's for sure.
Ayo!
This is the first time I've seen this one of the franchise. I've seen a bunch of the Freddy movies and a bunch of the Jason movies and a bunch of the Mike Myers movies. This one for the Foundation is so shitty.
Yeah.
It's funny because like we did A Nightmare on Elm Street, and the Nightmare on Elm Street Freddy is not the Freddy that we come to know and love, but at least he's a spook. Like in the honest way, like he has a joke or two. He looks like Slenderman for Christ's sake, and he's an honest threat. But also, he's in the fucking movie. Whatever Jason Voorhees is not in this movie. Even, like, the second one where he's wearing the potato sack is a thing. You see him, and this is nothing.
And even Mrs. Voorhees is in only the movie for about 15 minutes.
Yeah. And there's no indication whatsoever as to who she is or who her... son is. You have to know about the entire franchise in order to understand what's going on here.
She has to explain who she is in the last 20 minutes of the film. I'm shocked that this got a sequel at all, because Jason was a fart in the wind in this film at best.
It got a sequel because it made $39 million on a $500,000 budget.
But that's what I was going to say. I'm not correcting Daniel. I'm making the point, which is that it wasn't just that it made money. It's that it made 80 times itself in profit. That's how you do this, right? Like, that's why the first Scream is a big deal. That's why Psycho is a big deal. And we're talking different areas of magnitude. The Blair Witch Project is a movie I've seen once. I've seen the student film. There's some connections to around here for weird reasons that I know. But it's nothing.
And it's also a horrible film, but you're right. It made 10,000% profit, and therefore...
It's great. All right.
It's fine. It's more of a good idea than it is a movie, which is what we have here.
You're right. Yeah. It would have made a good short story. It's a terrible film. I actually saw Blair Witch Project in the theaters, and I sat in the front row, and I almost puked, right?
Because you were in the front row. Because
you get in a shaky cam for an hour and a half, and it's not a good film, but I get it. It's an interesting concept. It's got good lore behind it. But it would have made a better, you know, someone puts a flashlight on their face and tells you a scary story when you're stoned. Like, fine.
Right up their nose.
Right. You're like, wow, that was a cool idea. But it's not a good film, and it's sort of, this is the same thing.
Yeah.
Hear that, Paul Greengrass? You and your fucking Born Identity movies. Stop shaking the camera. I get it. Matt Damon can't throw a punch, but you don't have to jiggle. The movie doesn't have much to it.
In the 70s, there were actually a lot of like proto-slasher movies, and this really fits in with them.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever seen Black Christmas?
I have not, but I've seen enough of them. I've seen, you know, the ones set at malls from the early 80s. Mm. I've seen knockoffs of Halloween, too. I'd rather stick to my basics because while I'm still learning horror, I realize I have a high standard for bullshit, and this movie just stinks of it, right? Let's go around the panel. Steve-O, final thoughts.
I think it sucks. I mean, hot take. I didn't like it. I saw it once when I was probably 10 years old, and it's got a certain lore about it, and it's got, you know, 10 other sequels, but they're not well-deserved. It's an interesting concept. It would have made a great book. It's not a great film. Watch Nightmare on Elm Street. Watch Poltergeist. Pretend you watch this one. Tell your friends you watch this one, but don't watch it. It's not great.
In terms of heavy hitters, if you like Jason movies, fine. If you like this movie, fine. I'm not going to deny the impact that it had, but between this and Nightmare on Elm Street and the third one we're going to do, I think this one's going to hold up the least well, simply because it's simultaneously so derivative and just so sloppy. Nothing about the lore is really established in here beyond the fact that it's a summer camp that's supposedly cursed. And Tom Savini's got some great makeup effects and special effects in here, but even if that's all you're looking for, some of the later sequels were a lot more creative with it. So, and Tom Savini's been better too, except for maybe the kid Jason puppet that's got that giant head. I don't know if I'm ever going to rewatch this one again.
If you want to maybe start with the second one where Jason is the killer and there's a flashback to his mother being killed, because apparently Jason survived and was living out in the woods and turned into a 400-pound silent death machine, and he saw his mother killed. So just start with the second one and pretend this is the Star Wars prequel of the franchise.
Let's not pretend you have to see any of these. This is a indifferent horror movie. I think it's fine. I enjoyed it more than some of the rest of the people around this table. But frankly, I dug the ambiance mainly because I get the feeling it's almost like an art film at times. I thought it was fun. It's just, it's quiet. It's a horror movie. It's not bad. It's not great. I'm not defending it as great. I just thought it was interesting. I will say, if you want to see a good camp movie, though, see Wet Hot American Summer.
Mud on my ass.
But no one gets killed with a machete.
Don't they?
In Wet Hot American Summer, no.
I think somebody gets hit by the Mir satellite, don't they?
They do. I mean,
the Mir satellite, the Mir space station.
The thing about it is it hits so many cliches. This movie needs a hook, and there's no hook. It's just that they've seen other horror movies, and they made their own. This is practically a scary movie for 1980. It's just without the joke-em-ups. This could have used anything. The closest we get is Strip Monopoly. I'm shocked by how wet of a fart this movie is, because usually the first one is the best one, and I just don't know where the franchise... It really must have been that this movie was so cheap they could have released it for nothing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it may have been one of these ones that are like, well, it's out of theaters, let's put it on TV for a dime, because we've already made all of our profit. Which, frankly, that means that whoever produced this, maybe was Sean Cunningham as well, is a smarter businessman than he is a movie maker.
I think you're right. I think you're 100% right.
But regardless, I had more fun than the rest of these guys. This is just me looking as my, you know, my film major, my lens, my filmic lens. You know how this, the mise-en-scène of this movie was just so weak. I thought it was fun. Perfectly fine. Although if you want to have a joke, like a really good like slasher at your Halloween party this year, put on a later one.
Yeah.
That's where there's actual kills. That's where there's actual fun. There's like a later Freddy movie where there's actual jokes. There's nothing here. It's too silent. If you put this in the back corner of an art, like of a art museum where you're doing a retrospective, you wouldn't even need to turn the volume up.
Well, to be real though, just play the last scene where Mrs. Voorhees gets decapitated on repeat. I laughed my ass off. Has anyone ever seen a cleaner decapitation with a rusty machete?
Oh,
ever?
It's amazing.
It's the best.
And then she raises her hands up to try and feel where her head
exactly.
is.
Where's my head? Oh, it's gone, and I've got blood.
Her hands keep grabbing and flexing for like several minutes after she's decapitated.
That was great.
Oh my god, and like the way that she gave that monologue as though it was an Agatha Christie movie. She's like, oh, you haven't heard of Jason. Well, Jason drowned when everyone was having sexual intercourse.
Sexual intercourse.
And you're just like,
uh-huh. Have you heard of penises?
All right, church lady. I'm sure you've never felt a penis in your life. My husband ejaculated across the room and I got pregnant. Like, you're just like, all right there, oh, lady.
Goodness.
How's that for images you don't want in your head?
It ranks up there with the
my
arrow.
My sweater
through.
Almost needed to be dry cleaned. Gross. Anyway, so from the sexual fantasies of Linda Palmer, we must wrap this episode up. And in 2 weeks, stay tuned because we're going to cover, well, I guess Hellraiser. So stay tuned in 2 weeks and every other week as we put a bit of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Finn Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and product of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis, and is produced by Ann Burns, Nick Hoffman, Matthew Quinn, and Daniel Suttis. Our theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod of Incomptech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.